Hi, and welcome to the IREMS podcast. I am Santiago Borio, an Impact Activation Fellow, and I'm here with David Stern, one of the founding directors of IREMS. Hi, David.
Hi, Santiago. We're discussing the Smart Farming Conference today.
Yes, we discussed another event on AI for food security in the previous episode, but there was another event somewhat related to this that you attended, a global conference on smart farming hosted by the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations.
Yes, this was a three-day event. Very interesting. My understanding is it's the first of its kind. It also felt a bit that way in that there were a number of people where it wasn't clear what it was trying to achieve or what it was there for, in a sense. So it was still finding its feet. There were a whole range of different sessions, but I guess to me, one of the most interesting things for me was simply that this was in the FAO headquarters, which I had never visited before. Wonderful, incredible buildings in the center of Rome. From the eighth floor, you can look out at the Colosseum and the sights of Rome, and in this wonderful environment and very stimulating discussions, as much about the people I met and interacted with, even more than the conference itself.
That sounds lovely. But let me ask you more specifically, this is all about smart farming. What is smart farming?
Well, that was part of the confusion from a number of the participants. The event didn't seem to know. So there was a whole range of things. Sometimes very simple technologies were being presented, even just new fertilizer, new ways of fertilizing crops. That was considered smart farming. There were apps. There were some very advanced mechanized farming pieces. So there was a whole range of very high-tech AI-related, cutting-edge, if you want, interventions, down to some really rather practical, basic things being presented. And as an event, it didn't really seem to have a view on what it meant for something to be smart, other than it involved some element of digital technology.
I'm from Argentina, and there's huge farms in here, and there's in the news on new innovations on drone technologies to apply pesticides and all sorts of things like that. Was that sort of thing covered as well?
Absolutely. And this is one of the things that was sort of, this was very much a mixture of these very commercial farming techniques on large farms to things that were spaces where indigenous voices were being heard. There's a whole range. And so the actual directionality on that was not always clear.
And there's even one of the aims or the objectives to prioritize youth and women engagement.
Absolutely. This was a stated aim of the event. And I think this is what was so contradictory about it as an event. In some cases, it was really trying to engage with big agriculture, big tech, and encouraging people to embrace it. And in other places, it was really trying to encourage people to embrace smallholder farmers, youth, women, very grassroots initiatives. And so both were coexisting in this space, not always comfortably.
But in one of their key messages in their website, it specifically states that it's almost inevitable that technology will get into farming practices.
This was, again, something which the civil society was pushing back on, that one of their first key messages, smart farming is no longer a choice, but an imperative, was something which a lot of people reacted very negatively to, that it's not clear what smart farming is. And so what exactly is it that we're talking about here? Are we really talking about automation? That is the case in a lot of the large farming contexts, but it's not the case in every farming context. There was a wonderful discussion. There was something I hadn't heard before, which really relates to this. And we've discussed this. It was an episode with Kate where we discussed the future of work. And my example was schools. In 100 years' time, what do we see the societies we want to live in looking like? Do we imagine there to still be schools? Do we imagine teachers in classrooms? interacting with kids. Our general consensus was that, yes, I hope in 100 years' time, teachers in classrooms still exist. Well, the parallel I heard here was very interesting. It's, what is a farmer? A farmer is not the same as a farm worker. A farmer is someone who holds knowledge about the land, locally engaged in the environment, in the actual farming of their land, and the environmental sustainability of their land. And so the question was, if you think about some of the interventions and what might be seen as this imperative, well, land can be managed, decision-making can be managed without farmers, but that's a choice. Is that the future we want? Just as we could have education without teachers, is that the choice that we want to make? Or do we want to make choices where farmers and knowledge bearers, local knowledge bearers, managing land in certain ways and making decisions about how land is managed, rather than optimizing it simply for a particular goal? That's something which is a choice that we can now make. What do we see for our farming systems of the future? Do we see farming systems which still enable and serve farmers and where farmers serve the systems? Or do we imagine systems which don't need or have that human element in the same way, just as we could have education without teachers in the classroom? That doesn't mean that we want to go towards societies that don't have teachers, and we might not want to go to societies that don't have farmers. Really interesting discussions and questions. So that was one of the discussions I had when I was there.
And I suppose that the answer to that is very different depending on the type of farm that we're talking about. Large-scale farming versus small-scale subsistence farming looks very different.
Let's be clear, in their key messages, one of their other key messaging was smart farming must be inclusive and farmer-centered. So this idea of smart farming not being a choice but being an imperative is in juxtaposition with the idea that it must be farmer-centered. And so they have this vision in 100 years' time, let's say, of farmers still being central to the process. These are potentially contradictory because many of the indigenous groups, it wasn't clear what the role of the smart farming was playing for them, because that wasn't clearly articulated. It was clear what smart farming could do on your big Argentinian farms, which need that huge level of automation. It wasn't so clear in smallholder farmer systems, indigenously managed land. You know, it was a lot less clear.
But this is where technologies like what we discussed in the last episode, digital green, can have a very big impact on the smaller farming communities.
We've mentioned digital green in the previous episode, but I'd like to now shift to another set of technologies which I feel worth mentioning and maybe more relevant for this. And this is, if you're going to have smart farming, which is farmer-centered and really centering smallholder farmers, then the question of who owns the technology becomes central. And there is work happening, this amazing group, FarmHack. They've got the Farm Hack Hub. These ideas that you can have digitally sovereign technologies for smallholder farmers, for farming cooperatives, where your data is not being aggregated or extracted and aggregated, but it's yours to choose what you do, to choose who you share it with, how you share it, what it's used for. This is a very different vision. I felt that there were opposing visions being presented. One of an extractive technology, which is all about serving the technology creators, and another of subservient technology, where the technology is secondary to the communities or the farmers that it's serving. And I found that very interesting, and to see those two both presented alongside one another, both discussed as part of this sort of smart farming, was really, really interesting. And there were a whole set of different technologies, approaches, organizations present. It was a mix.
And when you talk about ownership, you're talking about the ownership of the technologies themselves, the data they might use. What does ownership mean?
It could mean all of the above. It could mean some of the above. This is the thing. There's no consensus on this at this point. There are groups who think it should be both the technologies and the data, and more than that. Yet there's a whole range. It's very interesting.
It seems to have been a very thought-provoking event. What are your key takeaways from it?
Interestingly, one of my key takeaways was that there was more common ground than I expected. You know, there was a lot of different people coming from different perspectives, actually thinking about what's needed, what's to be done, whether it was from an academic perspective, whether it was from the FAO perspective, and whether it's big farming, smallholder farming, all of these. And a priori, I expected there to be very little common ground. But as I was listening to it, there were differences, and there's clear areas of tension and conflict in the future. But I was surprised by how much common ground there was. Now, that might just be in the language, as some people felt that it was sort of different people paying lip service to language. But the more I dug into it, the more I felt actually there is a lot of common ground. And there are dangers and there are people who are not aligned, but a lot of people are aligned with this idea that farmers and what we want for the future is agriculture and food systems, which includes and is based on farmers. That seemed to be almost a consensus. Very few people were really arguing against that. Some people were arguing for, really, we can replace farm workers with robots and so on. But that was a minority. And that's farm workers. The idea of really replacing farmers and not having farmers as a key piece in the chain, that I didn't really, there weren't many people pushing for that. There were people who, what they were doing might lead to that. But not many people were really against this idea, as we've articulated, that smart farming must be farmer-centered. That's just one of the many things where I found there's a surprising amount of agreement, even where the disagreements are huge. And we mentioned in the previous episode the issues around the digitization of the genetic resources. That came to a head here in a way that was really, I suppose, as expected. There were just very different opinions when you had your big seed companies in the room alongside indigenous groups. They're not compatible. Protecting the seeds rights of indigenous and marginalized groups is not in the best interests of these big seed companies. And what the seed companies are doing is something which is at times borderline breaking the current treaties that exist, and maybe even going well beyond that. I don't know. I can't comment because I'm not an expert. But there was a mention of reports where so much of what should have been protected resources have found their ways into these companies' patents and so on. And so there are groups where this was irreconcilable and where there were real dangers at play. So I don't want to overstate this as a positive interaction where there was agreement. But I was, you know, not knowing much about this environment, about this space, I was personally surprised that the lines were not as great as I expected. And I guess maybe the thing which I should say is one of the things that I heard is that part of the problem with such an event was it wasn't tied in to the UN systems that the FAO and others actually controlled about getting things to regulation. So this event, although it was a lot of money invested, there was a lot of engagement, there was a lot that actually the event brought and interacted with, does not feed in to the regulatory processes as the previous event held at the World Food Programme did. That was a process which was part of a regulatory process, which eventually should lead in to some formal document and statement from the UN, which is legally binding in certain contexts and so on. Whereas this event is a standalone conference, as I understand it. And therefore, the long-term implications of the discussions that happen here are not clear. That did resonate with the experience that I had, which, while it was all very stimulating and interesting, it wasn't exactly clear to me what would come out of this other than networking. And for me personally, that's useful.
And it's always nice to see the two different ends of the spectrum meeting together to have positive discussions.
And I think some would argue that the discussions weren't that positive. And when a lot of resource has been put into this that could have been put into other things, there are people who may question that. So I don't feel qualified to really judge on the success of this event. But what I can say and what I can judge is that I had discussions in this event which I don't think I'd have had without it, and which I hope to now engage to be more productive, to be more useful, to have connections that I didn't have before. Just learning about meeting people within the FAO was really interesting, but also some of the partners. Now, this could be something where it leads to something. I don't know. Was it worth? I don't know what the dynamics of this are. I don't know what's to be expected. It was an interesting conference. How it fits in with all the other things that FAO and these organizations do, I don't know.
And how it fits in with IDEMS work as well.
For IDEMS itself, just being at this sequence of events is hugely influential. I came back and I was discussing with Kate over the weekend and today about how some of what I've learned potentially fits into the directions we're trying to take now, how actually it might enable us to accelerate in certain directions, particularly with respect to our agroecology work, where I've now met people like Rickin face-to-face for the first time. I've met Dawn from the FarmHack group for the first time face-to-face and got on well. I caught up with Jakob van Etten from the CGIAR Centres, the Alliance, and the work that we've done with them in the past on tricots. There's more ideas which are coming up from this. And so for us, actually meeting, this is just a few people of the many people who were there, but there's so many stimulating conversations. And maybe the last one I should mention is that I had really interesting discussions with Andrea and Carolina from the Scuola Campesina about the curriculum they're making, which I'd been discussing with them for 6 months as part of a flow process around the digital curriculum. And I never really got it. And then when we were together and with Dawn, suddenly I get it and I see how important it is. And I see what they're trying to do with this, you know, have a curriculum to enable farmer groups, farmer organizations to think about digital sovereignty and to be able to understand how that fits into this bigger picture and what they can actually do, how it could practically serve them. I understand that now in a way I didn't before. So yeah, watch this space for that. And maybe we'll do another episode soon on some of this digital sovereignty curriculum.
Sounds good. Well, thank you very much, David.
No, thank you. It's been very interesting. It's good to get these two episodes out just after the events have happened. So thank you for taking the time to quiz me about it.
No, very interesting events.